talking. We're going talking today where things are popping. The Marian way, we're going to drop in on discussions of the day on the Exchange Club. Exchange Club, we're going debating. We're going to debate very loud and we'll be laughing and floating high on a cloud. Phones are ringing from listeners all around on the Exchange Club. Exchange Club, and we'll guess and goof and talk on Exchange. Read, debate, and think it's Exchange. Tune in, we're on. Turn on, I'm in. It's on today. Exchange Club.
And away we go. It's a Getaway Friday. Friday, September the 15th, halfway through the month of September 2023. 17 and a half minutes past the hour, joined in studio by Pastor Craig and Matt Morgan on this Friday. Do want to remind everybody, tonight we'll be back with Carrington, Sean, and Matt, 8:15 to 10 p.m. on this station. And starting off, now this is, honestly, this is not a political what should I say? This is not a political topic, but it will seem political in the beginning, but you'll get where I'm going with this. Republican Tim Scott is running for president on the Republican side. I believe he's a senator from South Carolina, I believe is where he's from. Now, why are you talking about Tim Scott? Well, Tim Scott is single, and the question has proposed itself this week. Would we elect a single person president of the United States? Now, interestingly enough, the story on Tim Scott this week, and it's got him a lot of publicity, which I'm sure he likes running for president, but he says he has a girlfriend, but nobody can seem to find her. Now, I'm sure they will, but this is where we are. So, the question is, Democrat, Republican, Independent, whatever, would we elect a single person president? Because we've talked about age being a factor, we've talked about health being a factor, we've talked about gender being a factor. We've talked about ethnicity being a factor. Is your marital status a factor?
I don't think so.
Why not?
I just don't see the point in disliking somebody in terms of public office just because they're not married.
But it is with him because it's become a story. And if he's not going to show his girlfriend, why does he keep talking about her?
It's not like he's more self-conscious about it than other people are.
Well, he's been asked about it, I think. I'm almost positive he has been. I don't know. We're getting a phone. Hey, we're a phone call right off the bat here this week. This could be interesting. Go ahead, caller.
Scott, this is Judy.
Yes.
And I wanted to tell you, I just called Ralph Thacker, and he told me they got the pizza.
Oh, good. Ralph got the neighbor's pizza.
Yes, and he said it was very good. I got a cold in my throat. He said they'd never gotten any there, but his brother did. And he says he will get some, you know, like some more there. But he's going to be having surgery. I think it's pretty, I don't know, extensive in October.
Oh, okay. Well,
so I said, are you going to do the fruitcake thing? And he said, no, 6 months, I don't think he can, like, do anything.
Okay, well, hopefully for the following fruitcake he'll be back with. Or maybe he can just come out that night and watch.
Yeah, and I told him to to call you and let you know about the pizza, and he wanted to know, I guess, your home number. He had that, and I said, yeah. So I kind of gave him your hours, and I guess that's about it, and stuff, so.
Well, I appreciate it. Hey, thanks, and glad to hear about Ralph.
Yeah, he said he's had a lot of stuff, I guess, so. And it's kind of iffy, the surgery. I didn't ask what it was. If it was like, I don't know if it has to do with the heart or what. So it's, I guess, kind of, he almost has to have it done, but I think it's kind of dangerous. Well, it would be dangerous, but he said they told him all the stuff. And I said, well, I just tell him I don't want to know any of the stuff. Just do it.
That's right. Well, we'll send him our best.
Uh-huh.
Thanks.
Okay, goodbye.
All right. Well, we're glad Ralph got his pizza. And on that note, it makes me thank to Mr. Shirk for dropping off the produce here today. We've got green peppers and different kinds of peppers and tomatoes. And thank you, Mr. Shirk. All right, Pastor, single for president.
Well, we've elected two bachelors in the past, James Buchanan and Grover Cleveland.
And with James Buchanan, we thought he was a homosexual.
Right.
And Grover Cleveland got married while he was president.
Right.
So
the answer to the question is, yes, we would certainly In the past, we've elected someone who's single. I don't really see that as, I honestly don't see that being an issue with Tim Scott running for president, him being single. Like you mentioned, you know, age has become, you know, kind of a big thing. And I think age will always sort of be kind of big, you know. Anytime you have a elderly person running, it's going to come up as a question. I really don't think the being single versus married is really that much of an issue.
Isn't it interesting, though, that both single presidents happened before the 20th century, before we really had television, radio, or anything, internet, anything of that nature, and that even in the 19th century, when they both were elected, one was thought to be gay, which we really don't know if he was or not,
right,
and the other one got married while they were in the White House.
Right. But it sounds like maybe Tim Scott, if he were to be elected, he might get married in the White House too.
But is this the rub on it? Is it really not that he's single? Is it maybe he's gay? Maybe he's been with a lot? Does it affect the judgment?
I will say this. I think being single today, the questions about whether or not that person is gay, I think, are more likely to come up than they would have been 100 years ago.
Oh, I think you're exactly right. And maybe that's why I think that is the implication with Tim Scott right now, because he does talk about his girlfriend, but yet nobody's seen her.
Right. And that's probably why he brings up his girlfriend and talks about his girlfriend and, you know.
So here's the other question. Could we elect a homosexual president?
I really don't know. I'll tell you what.
What about a single homosexual?
Well, I was going to say, up until about 20 years ago, if somebody was a single homosexual, and it was known, I don't think they would have been elected. Today, I still don't know if they could be elected, but they would have a better chance of being elected if they were a known homosexual.
Until I got in my 20s and got around media and got around politicians, I did not realize how many people were closeted. Now, this might come as a shock to somebody out there, but we have had gay city council people. But I bet the general public doesn't know that we've had gay city council people, because if they had known, I think they would not have been elected. I will tell you that we have had gay radio personalities, but you didn't talk about it. Well, and here we go. So it's interesting, because that was a very quiet thing. You never talked about it, but you knew.
Right.
What do you think about that, Matt? You're a different generation here.
So I'm reading a Washington Post article about Tim Scott right now.
Oh, we forget we're doing a show here or something?
Yeah, I guess.
You're supposed to do that before the show.
I didn't realize.
I didn't know we were talking about him today.
I didn't realize, Scott, that when you're talking that we're supposed to catch up on our reading.
I know. I hope the new people that Matt works with can get a handle on him.
To other radio stations out there, when you hire Matt,
it's going to be a little touch and go.
He said that. So apparently they did ask him about it as well.
Is he gay?
No.
If he's got a girlfriend.
Yes.
Okay, gotta be more specific here. Lay it on me.
He said, I probably have more time and energy and more latitude to do the job, he replies. And then the senator quickly adds, as an aside, my girlfriend wants to see me when I come home.
Now see, that's strange to me.
I think he thinks it looks bad on him.
Well, I'm asking you, from your generation, would you vote for a homosexual for president?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's policy over person.
But it's not for everybody.
I mean, it should be.
Well,
policy over person.
You know, it should be policy over person, but, you know, you can look at the current situation. You know, I think Donald Trump is a classic example. It's personality over policy. And I think there have been other people where it was personality over policy, when in fact it should be policy over personality. But people aren't willing to separate personality and policy.
I'm just surprised that, because I believe if you didn't tell people that the person was a homosexual, or you didn't know if they were single or not, I don't think you would notice any difference in their job. So that it matters is what's fascinating to me. Somehow if we could hide age, somehow if we could hide gender, somehow if we could hide these little superficial things, I think if it was just a circle, you would find out that the circle is doing the job you thought they would do.
You know, you bring up a good point, Scott. A lot of it has to do with the individual. If they don't make the fact that they're a homosexual front and center, yes, they're in most situations they did their job, didn't make a big deal about it, you wouldn't know they were homosexual. The flip side of that is you can take somebody like Pete Buttigieg, who's a transportation secretary for the United States under the Biden administration. He makes the fact that he's a homosexual front and center. So it's out there and you're constantly seeing it. And so that has become part of the criticism of him is that he has that lifestyle. That part of the criticism wouldn't be there if he didn't make it front and center. So yeah, I agree with you 100%. There have been a lot of homosexuals that we didn't know they were that, and they do their jobs and everybody's happy.
Well, it's very interesting to me though, because if you have to keep that a secret, because the problem herein lies, like with Pete Buttigieg, for example, that first came out when he was mayor, yeah, mm-hmm. in Indiana. Was it South Bend?
Something like that. Yeah.
Now, back then, I don't think people even knew who Pete Buttigieg was. Now, maybe the people of South Bend knew he was gay, but that's about it. But when you run for president, you're on national spotlight. So whether you tell people or not, if you've ever told anybody, we're going to find out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not so much that you want everybody to know. It's that it's going to come out. You're either going to admit it yourself, or it's going to come out in the wash from one of your opponents.
Right.
So, can you keep it a secret?
You can keep it as Yeah, it's going to come out in the press, but you don't have to supply the press with information. I mean, you know, Pete has brought out the fact that he and his male partner have adopted kids. He has brought out to the press, you know, when he's taken time off to take care of, you know, their kids. So, yes, it's going to come out in the press, but you don't have to also be supplying the press with information on a regular basis if you don't want to.
What do you think, Matt? Should you tell or should you not the intricacies of your life? If you, like Tim Scott there's talking about his girlfriend, in a question that really had nothing to do with his girlfriend.
Which I don't think that was necessary.
And we certainly knew a lot about Melania Trump. We certainly know a lot about Dr. Biden. We certainly know a lot about Michelle Obama. It's inevitable, I guess, to talk about your partner.
Like I said, I don't think it matters all that much. Like, if you're... I just don't understand where it matters at.
Well, I think, again, because I think homosexuality does matter to a lot of people. I think there's a connotation of that when you're single. Certainly your opponents will drive that home if they think it's going to put you down to some degree. And also that you are not easy to be around, that you do not make good choices. Until Ronald Reagan, we never elected a divorce president, and that's 1981.
I feel like a divorce is different than no marriage.
It was not for a long time. I don't know that we could elect an atheist president. Took a long time to elect a Catholic, John Kennedy.
Yeah, it did. It did. And I don't think we could elect a president if he was, you know, openly atheist.
It's interesting. They're fascinating things because none of these things have to do with the job they're going to do. Now, people can relate them to the job they're going to do, because obviously somebody who's homosexual is probably going to be pro-gay marriage. Somebody who is... atheism's an interesting one, because it's kind of hard to decide what they're going to do on the whole, because when I did the interview with Glenn Coble on Monday, I was actually shocked to a certain degree for recreational marijuana, but hasn't made his mind up on abortion. I thought that was interesting. Because I think the connotation would have been from an atheist Democratic candidate that here he's going to be for abortion rights.
I go back to, well, Glenn and I have talked a lot, and I had him on my show one Sunday. And I go back to when I talked to Glenn on my show, and I got the feeling that day that even then he really wasn't solid on where he stood on abortion. I think that's something that he's been wrestling with for a while.
So that's interesting, but will that hurt him with the Democratic Party?
I mean, I think so.
Hurt him with women?
Maybe.
You know, I don't know what the numbers are, but if August vote on issue one is any indication, it very well could.
You know, you asked if it would hurt him with the Democratic Party. I'm half facetious when I say that, but is there even a Democratic Party here in Marion?
Well, I Democratic voters.
Okay.
Yeah. Will it hurt him with the Democratic voters?
I think so, because he doesn't, I guess, like, that's one of the solid, I guess, stances for the Democratic side is their stance on abortion. So the fact that he doesn't take
a firm stand.
Yeah, like a firm stance like all the others do, I think it will like ostracize him a little bit.
You know what's interesting with our mayoral races? We get very close, and that night we've got some very good coverage. Pastor Craig will be at Republican headquarters. Linda Sims will be at Democratic headquarters. Matt will be at the Board of Elections. Carrington, Sean, Glenn Coble will be live. And that's never happened, so that's historic, having a mayoral candidate live in studio as his results are coming in on if he's going to be the next mayor or not. We'll have live call-ins from people, and we will not go off the air that night starting at 7:15 until everything's decided, recreational marijuana, abortion, and every local race that we have, including mayor. And we'll have other call-in, and there'll be other people in studio. But what's fascinating to me about Glenn Coble is, as we get closer and closer and closer, the rap on him, mostly laid on him by his own party and by his fellow Democrats, is he's not working as hard. So now has that rubbed off on the voter who say, well, maybe he's not working as hard. In where he would have a chance because of this circumstance of abortion and recreational marijuana being on the ballot, is he just permanently damaged because how he's been treated by his own party?
That's a good question. I mean, we've talked, I've had big questions all along about, you know, the Democratic Party, their support or lack of support. I don't know.
I think that the Democratic Party in Marion, they haven't had a thing at the fair for the last few years, I don't think, right?
Right.
So, like, the Democratic Party in Marion seems to be, falling apart.
Are you surprised by the people who are in office who are Democrat and maybe few and far between aren't really standing behind Glenn?
I think it's kind of crazy. I mean, I don't know. I guess it just depends. I don't know.
Mayor Schertzer has yet to endorse him, and in the interview Monday, I said, is Mayor Schertzer going to endorse you? It's getting close to time here, and have you asked him for the endorsement? And he said, the mayor said he would endorse me when he thought I was doing enough work. And I thought, well,
okay. But he also said that he didn't ask again.
But where did that answer come from then? Because didn't he say the mayor said, I haven't?
I think that was the first time.
Well, and it hasn't come yet. And I ask the mayor every month that he's on. I say, are you going to endorse Glenn? And he hasn't yet.
I do think the fact that Glenn has put in less work than Bill has definitely hurt him.
Now, do we really know that, though? See, that's the question. Do we really know that?
That he put in less work than
Bill?
I mean, I guess we don't know, but judging by the signs
but now
things like that.
There is a Republican Party that has meetings and does put signs out. I don't know.
Either way, so even if Bill and Glenn are working the same amount, Bill has people assisting him that Glenn doesn't, meaning Glenn is still being outworked by Bill, either way.
If if Bill and Glenn were putting the same amount of hours in, Bill has a better network working for him than Glenn does.
But I think any Republican does.
I would agree. Right. I would agree.
So,
and you know, my question is, I mean, what's it going to take to light a fire under the Democratic Party in Marion? I mean, and you know, this is coming from a lifelong Republican, but I see a Democratic Party that's just, you know, it's on life support system.
Yeah, but how doth we get there if you're the Democratic Party? How did that happen?
I don't know, because what was the situation 20 years ago?
Oh, it wasn't that. No, we had a Democratic county commissioner. Clearly, we had a Democratic mayor, still do, for 16 years. At one point, city council being Democrat. The president of city council is a Democrat. The sheriff was a Democrat for 16 years.
And, you know, I know that, okay, so Ohio is a red state. You know, Ohio,
now,
yes. But on the local level, there is less of that. There's more, you know, support for a local politician who's doing a good job, regardless of party. There tends to be more of that. And, you know, how did the air get out of the balloon? How did the steam get turned off? I guess is my question.
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. Bad candidates, no support from an infrastructure of a party. I don't know. I do know that it did happen about the time that we started voting down ticket. And we started voting party lines, which did not happen until about 2016. Used to be you could still be a Democrat and win, even if the top of the ticket, if you were voting for the president and you voted Republican, or if you were voting for governor and you voted Republican, you could still be a Democrat locally and win. That doesn't happen anymore.
So is Ohio technically considered a red state now?
It is now, but you know what? I don't know if that's true on the whole, because we voted twice for George W. Bush, we voted twice for Obama, and we voted twice for Trump.
Yeah. Like,
so I don't know.
I've always known Ohio as a swing state.
I guess if it swings back to the Democrats next time, you would consider that. It is interesting that since... I think people consider it a red state because we voted for the losing candidate the last time, and that's the first time we've done that
in a long time.
Long time.
Yeah, if you win the battleground states, you have a pretty good chance of winning.
Well, because if you think about it, the truth of Ohio is, as far as I can remember back, we voted twice for Trump, and the second Trump was the loser, the losing election for Ohio, but twice for Obama, he won both times, twice for W. Bush, he won both times, twice for Clinton, he won both times, for George H.W. Bush, he won the one time, and interesting, H.W. Bush ran against Clinton, and when Ohio flipped to Clinton, Clinton won the election. We voted twice for Reagan. Reagan won both times. We voted for Carter the one time he won. And, you know, Carter won. Nixon. We voted both times for Nixon. Nixon won. Boy, we're going back to the 50s, probably 40s.
Yeah. The only time I'm not sure about is I don't know which way Ohio went and... and Kennedy.
I think we voted for Kennedy.
Kennedy,
I'm almost positive.
Okay.
Yeah. But, so we go way back, and I'm sure we did Eisenhower both times. So, we're going a ways back. But the point is, that's why they consider us a red state now, because we backed somebody who did not win the presidency last time.
I mean, it's bound to happen at some point.
Right, but until it goes the other way, they'll say that.
By the way, were the majority of the presidents you listed off not Democratic candidates?
No,
there was a good amount. I mean, Obama was Democrat.
Clinton,
Carter. I mean, there was
Johnson.
Yeah.
Kennedy.
That's what I said.
That's why we were a swing state, because we would go back and forth.
Yeah.
We seemed to back the winner, not so much the party.
Yeah.
Last time that didn't happen, and that's why now we think, well, maybe we're just voting one way.
And really, Ohio has pretty much kind of been that same way as far as their governors. You know, we've elected Republican governors. We've elected Democratic governors.
Strickland and Celeste were Democrats.
Right.
And
right.
Rhodes and DeWine and Kasich were Republicans.
Taft.
Taft was Republican.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. It's went both ways. But now, will it? That's the question. I think one of the problems is every national office holder in Ohio, except Sherrod Brown, is a Republican. We voted for a Republican last time for president who did not win. And a lot of the counties now are majority Republican, us being one of them.
I don't think that's very healthy.
Well, but the question was, what happened to the Democratic Party? Is it going to take a transformative candidate on their part nationally to swing it back? Because I'd be very interested in Ohio, if the Democrats got a transformative candidate and Ohio went Democrat nationally, would that follow suit locally? I think it would.
And I honestly think that DeWine would not be the governor if they had really, if the Democrats had really put a quality Democrat up for the governor. I really do believe that the only one reason that DeWine won is not because Ohio is a Republican state or a red state. It's because the candidate that they had just didn't have it.
You know what? Now let's take all the politics out of it. And from what we've heard from Bill Collins and what we've seen, and from what we've heard from Glenn Coble and what we've seen, if there were no party affiliation there and you just had the two men and it wasn't Ohio and we weren't looking at all the other things, who would win that election?
Straight up, it's going to look like Bill. He's got...
You think?
He's got more of the advertisement.
No, no. Take... Because advertisement can be influenced by the fundraising of the party.
Take it all away.
Take it all away. He's got two guys. Who would win? Because we know these guys at this point.
I think Glenn would have a great shot at it.
There you go. Interesting. Glenn's a good speaker. Glenn's got a communications background. If Bill had to fight for it, and my guess is, I don't know, boy, it's 50-50 right now. When the League of Women Voters have their debate, I don't know if Bill will show or not. The last mayoral candidate did not.
When is it scheduled for?
It's usually late October.
Okay.
But the problem is now nobody listens to it because they do it on a station nobody listens to. So there you go. I hate to say that, but that's the truth. What can you do? Sorry, I don't know what more to say. I didn't do it, but when we turned it down, and they did that, you know, that's a story for the book. But we turned it down after doing it for 4 years.
Why?
There are rules. If your opponent doesn't show up, you can't do anything but give a statement. And what it was beginning to happen, and I hate to say this, but just check the facts: the Republicans were not showing up because they were still winning with not showing up. So essentially what you were having was a bunch of Democrats on the stage who got to make an opening statement and then couldn't take any questions. I didn't like the rules. I thought it was superfluous at that point.
Because you had a situation where the Republicans were saying, we don't need to show up.
When the mayoral candidate didn't show up, I thought, ooh, this is a bad sign. This is no longer... It used to be, who's going to win? That was still your shot to get in there.
Yeah.
Now, it's not. Because if your opponent doesn't show up, you just sit next to an empty chair and you get a 3-minute statement, and that's all.
So better make the best of that 3 minutes.
And you can prepare, but if your opponent doesn't show up, and Republicans, and I'm not saying they're lying, but if I recall, when that mayoral candidate didn't show up, they had RSVP'd to show up, so the Republican, Mayor Schertzer, or Democrat, Mayor Schertzer, thought he was going to debate him, and then all of a sudden there was a medical emergency the night of the debate. Not saying there wasn't, but timing's everything.
Well, I'm a lifelong Republican, but, you know, I could say a lot of criticisms of the Republican Party, and I honestly do believe that part of their problem is they're too much thinking, knowing that they're going to win, and I think they've gotten kind of lazy or arrogant about their situation.
And I don't think Bill would be afraid of Glenn, but I think that would be his thinking.
Right.
This can only hurt me.
Right. I don't need to do this, and I could only get hurt by it, so why bother?
Right. And also thinking that he could not take on Glenn because he does have a communications background, and Bill, let's face it, is not the most eloquent speaker in the world.
I always just kind of figured that if somebody didn't show up to the debate, I would take that as a negative for the person who didn't show up.
Used to be.
Because I think it would just show that that person thought they would lose.
Nope. Not anymore.
No, it should be a negative because it shows if you don't show up, it shows that you're arrogant enough to think that you don't have to show up, you're going to win.
Well, now, none of us in this room can vote for mayor because we all live in the county or live in a different county. That being said, if lifelong Republican, if mm-hmm. Bill did not show, we don't know what's going to happen yet, but it will happen. The choice will come up here in a few weeks. If Bill does not show, would you have voted for Glenn just because Bill didn't show? Because Glenn's going to show.
It would be a major part of my decision. Yeah, I would think very lowly of the person for not showing. And I realize at this point I'm probably not going to be allowed any of the food on election night at the Republican headquarters.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you this. Well, we're also going to find something out on election night because if Bill is elected, will he speak with us? Every mayor in the and it's been Mayor Schertzer and Mayor Kellogg, but every mayor, Republican and Democrat, has always come on with us once the mayoral election is called. Bill?
So that'll be an interesting test.
Yeah, that'll be... Because you know what? Mayor Schertzer comes on 45 minutes every month. Mayor Kellogg came on 45 minutes every month. Will Bill or Glenn? I don't doubt Glenn will. We'll see. All right, what do you think, Matt? Who would you vote for if Bill did not show up to... And again, you don't vote in this because you're not from Marion City, but... Who would you vote for if Bill didn't show up to the candidates' night?
Based strictly off of the not showing up?
Would that matter to you?
Yeah, it would matter.
Okay, based on that?
Based on that, I probably would vote for Glenn.
Oh, there you go.
Especially if, like you said, I mean, I guess you said there was like a health emergency, but especially if they had already RSVP'd and then didn't show up, that'd be obnoxious.
You know, this kind of goes back to, you know... how good is your word? And you know, I think back to the when DeWine was running for governor in the primary. You know, you had, and then the election that came after that. You had the one guy that got beat in the primary who said, "I will not vote for DeWine. I will not help him." He gets elected governor and he comes on here and he says, "I will do anything that DeWine asks for me." Well, you've just destroyed your credibility. You look at the other candidate who was also beat in the primary and he said, "I will not vote for DeWine. As a matter of fact, I'm going to sell my business and I'm moving out of the state of Ohio." Well, he didn't sell his business. He didn't move out of the state of Ohio. And he came back on here and said, "Well, you know, I have employees that I have to be concerned about." Those are the things that people remember, that your word is not good. And, you know, that's the kind of thing that gives people a sour taste for any politician when they know that they're saying things and they can't be counted on.
You know, I found the ego in that particular primary very interesting because we're talking about Jim Renacci and Joe Blystone here. And what was fascinating to me was both of them clearly did not like DeWine. They were primarying him. Clearly did not want DeWine to be governor. They primaried him. No sitting governor in Ohio had been primaried in over 100 years. Now, the interesting thing, DeWine won that primary with under 50% of the vote. If either Blystone had not been there or Renacci had not been there, chances are the other would have been the candidate, the Republican candidate. DeWine would not even have won the primary.
That's correct.
But their egos were so big, neither one could get out of the way of the other.
That's right.
So they got DeWine, and they both, in the end, I bet Blystone didn't vote, which is not saying much for him, and I bet Renacci voted for DeWine. So there you go.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, I have my own personal thoughts on how they should have handled that. But, yeah, I mean, I knew going into that primary that DeWine was going to win the primary because you had two people fighting over, you know, the anti-DeWine vote.
Which was over 50% in the Republican Party.
There was no way one of them was going to get enough to beat DeWine with the other one in the race.
You know what was fascinating about that on the whole, and the numbers prove this out? Renacci was a politician. He had money. He had financial backers. And he came in first. And he always was polling above Blystone, by and large. Here came Blystone with the cowboy hat and was running these campaigns, and for some reason got 10 to 11% traction. So started to poll third. And I think somewhere along the line, this man who clearly did not have any political ambition, because we haven't seen any since, started to see 10 and 11% and just could not get out of the way of himself. Because if he... Why would Renacci drop out? Because honestly, if you, politics is your life, you were an older, he was older than Blystone, he had experience, and he jumped in first, and he always polled higher than Blystone. Why would he get out?
He had no reason to. And to be honest with you, if you know, I'm going to be very critical of Blystone, and I voted for Blystone in the primary, but I'm going to be very critical of him. He should have had enough sense to, if he truly was running because he didn't want DeWine to be the governor, he should have been able to look at it and say, you know, with Renacci in here, Renacci's ahead of me, I have accomplished what I wanted to accomplish, and I will drop out. I would have thought very highly of Mr. Blystone if he had done that. If he would have read the situation for what it was and had enough integrity to drop out of the race, then he would have got what he wanted. DeWine would not be sitting down at the Capitol right now.
You know, interestingly enough, before we do the top 10, I honestly think what happened there was, even though the poll showed Renacci was pretty much 10% at least ahead of Blystone, I think that, and this goes back to Glenn Coble, when you see polls, you don't believe them. And I honestly believe Blystone thought he was going to be the candidate, thought he was going to win, didn't believe the polls. That's why he wouldn't get out. And Glenn, who is just the opposite of people say, he's saying, well, I'm running, but I know I don't have much of a chance. I think you've got to believe. Why are you running if you don't believe you have a chance? But again, didn't help Blystone's cause.
Right. So. And, you know, there was a fair amount of ego involved in that whole situation. I mean, Blystone, he announced he was running before DeWine ever announced he was running for re-election. Blystone announced, even before Renacci got into the race, he had signs out all over Ohio a full year before the primary. I mean, so he was in for a long time, but unfortunately he was in so long and had a false sense of security, a false sense of what the outcome was going to be, that he couldn't read the handwriting on the wall.
Let's get to the top 10 list here from the home office in Columbus, Ohio. Let's see if we got it here. We do. There's the drum roll. All right. This afternoon's top 10 list is, let's go here, let's do this one. Top 10 most annoying phrases. Most annoying phrases. Are you ready for this? Number 10, fairly unique. That's a little strange.
Yeah.
That's an annoying phrase. Number 9, at this moment in time. Little off. Number 8, with all due respect. Well, clearly, you have no respect for the person when you say that. Here comes a bad... I, personally... That's a bad one, too. Top 10 most annoying phrases. Number 6, thanks in advance. That's... I'm for that. No offense, but...
Yeah.
There's another one. At the end of the day...
Mm-hmm.
Just saying... Number 2, it is what it is. I hate that saying.
I love it is what it is.
What does that mean?
I love it. I love it.
What
I'm with
it?
You, Matt.
It
I'm
is what it is.
It is what it is.
What else would it be? If I say literally all the time, what does that mean?
Hey, it is what it is.
It is. What else would it be?
What if no?
What if no? Exactly right.
What if no?
Aye, aye, aye. More Carrington, less everybody else. Top 10 most annoying phrases. Number 1, It's not rocket science. That is exactly right. Good list, Bob. Good list. That was a good list today.
Yes, it was.
I hate it is what it is. I used to work with a guy who said that constantly. It was an answer to everything. Why'd you do that? It is what it is. Is it?
Yeah, it is.
No, it's not. What does that mean?
In the overall scheme of things, Scott, you just got to boil it down really simple. In the overall scheme of things, it is what it is.
What else would it be?
What else would it be?
Literally. It's awful. It's
just saying.
Awful. Just saying. That's right. No offense, but why is our language so screwed up?
You know, that's a whole nother topic for another.
It really is.
I got some strong feelings about that. That's another Friday.
No wonder why people have trouble learning this language. I would. It's very difficult. It doesn't make any sense at all.
No, it doesn't.
Oh, yeah. We have a lot of filler words.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, this is interesting. Hold on. We're going to take this phone call. Then we'll come back with more here. Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, it should be. It is what you make of it.
It is what you make.
That's what it should be.
I just think it is.
You know, if somebody, you know, if you're trying to do something, if you don't try, you know, it is what you make of it.
Well, I just think if somebody says, why is something that way, if you don't want to give them an explanation, just say, it is. It's that way.
Yeah.
You know, it is what it is just redundant.
That's like, you knew it from the beginning that you was going to fail. But if you actually make something of it, you know, and work, you know, you can get ahead.
You know, like on that third or fourth marriage, it is what it is. Failure's coming. Whether you like it or not. Thank you.
Yep.
All right. Again, phone lines are always open. 740-383-9944. Now, I think we should end this particular program on the topic, because I don't think Pastor Craig has got to weigh in on this, the sincerity topic that we started early on this morning with, because it's an interesting topic, and it's very androgynous, because there is no right or wrong answer. But do people do good deeds to be sincere, to do them for the right reasons, or do they do them for the thank you and possibly to win somebody over?
Well, I've been listening to a lot, you know, as you've been talking about it, and my honest feeling is that there are a few people that really do nice things, do good things. They have no expectation of anything in return. They don't expect a thank you. There's not ulterior motives for it. That's what they do. But those people are few and far between. I really do think that most times people do good things with some expectation. It may be an expectation of a thank you. It may be an expectation of recognition for what they did. It may be an expectation of enhancing their personal relationship with you. And I think most of the times there are not pure motives.
But am I wrong here in my example of this? When somebody brings you breakfast once a week and you don't ask them to do that, and a matter of fact, at some point you tell them you don't have to do this, if they keep doing that, and then one day it just stops. And the explanation I get from these people, like Matt and Carrington last night, well, what if their feelings just change? Well, that's exactly my point.
Yeah.
You weren't doing it to be nice. You were doing it.
There was
a motive.
There was another motive there. I agree 100%. There was another motive there.
Yeah, and I find that disgusting now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. Try to just take somebody else off.
I have a question.
Go right ahead.
If she had stopped bringing you breakfast.
Yep.
But kept. So you said that her personality also changed.
It did at that time.
So what if she stopped bringing you breakfast, but her personality didn't change? Would that be fake?
No. I don't think it would.
No.
Because then I would say, oh, okay. Maybe you just got tired of bringing me breakfast.
Maybe her financial situation changed.
Maybe she just got busier in the morning.
But if her personality doesn't change through all of it and through that change, you wouldn't think anything about her personally. You would think, well, her situation's changed or whatever.
Right. You don't see the difference there?
I mean, yeah, but you just... You said, I don't understand how people could say, maybe her feelings just changed. And then as soon as
but what if her personality didn't change?
But then she might have just got tired of bringing me breakfast, which is exactly how I phrased it earlier.
Completely different things. Because you're using, what if her feelings just changed, as an explanation for, she was just a very sincere person, and then all of a sudden she wasn't sincere? No, that's baloney. That ain't what it is.
Yeah, because I'll tell you what, if she's doing it for no other reason than she's just a nice person, then she won't get tired of doing it. You know, you said maybe she stopped because she got tired of doing it. Well, she got tired of doing it because she had an unmet expectation.
You're telling me nice people don't get tired of being nice?
No. When they don't get what they want?
Well, yeah. Yeah. When they don't, it's an unmet expectation.
And then they're not so nice people.
Right. But no, nice people who do nice things don't get tired of doing nice things because they don't have an ulterior motive. They don't have an expectation of anything in return.
Like you brought a pop for me earlier, and now, yeah. I mean, since we're here usually on Fridays, you will. I know. Let me try to win you over, Pastor. You're in trouble.
Where's my pop?
I know. So the point is that you know that's not for any expectation. You're not like, maybe he'll give me a better time slot. That's not what's going on there. But and I know that. So you would do that no matter what we would be doing in life. You know, whether we're disagreeing on this subject right now. You're still going to bring a pop if you happen to stop and get one. That's sincerity. I brought you a strawberry frosty you didn't even ask. You didn't even know I was going there. I just knew you were going to be here and I thought I'll grab you one. The produce that just showed up, that gentleman, I didn't even know he was showing up. He didn't want anything from me. The Stewarts we got a few weeks ago. That was just a kind deed. Didn't want to be mentioned on the air or anything of that nature. But when you do something continuously, week in, week out, week in, week out, week in, week out, and then it just stops one day, yeah, I assume your feelings did change. But I believe whatever you were hoping for or whatever you were going for or whatever you thought you had stopped. And so that I don't have to be nice to that person anymore. That is insincerity.
Yeah, and I think along that lines, the sincere things are the ones that just happen randomly. When it's weekly, when it's every week, every week, every week, every week, it's probably not sincere.
And
there's
probably
something else going on.
And you know that at the time, but you don't want to call somebody a phony.
Right.
So you don't. And I did say many times, you don't have to do this.
And honestly, if it was sincere and there weren't ulterior motives, and when you said you don't have to do this, the sincere person would stop doing it.
Right. Or it would continue. You got two choices. They would stop doing it or it would continue on forever no matter what their feet. Because it's not like somebody murdered somebody, I mean, let's get real here. It just... That's what I don't like about that particular situation. I think that was completely insincere now, and it changes my perspective on what I thought was a very sincere person. You never had somebody who you believed was a good person, and then you, oh, wow, they're not. Oh, wow,
not off the top of my head, no, but I mean, I'm sure...
You find the real person one day.
I'm sure
under all
met
that.
Somebody.
It's an interesting thing. You're more sad for them than you are for yourself, because you can do without the breakfast, and you can do without them, to be honest with you. But what you think is, this is why this person's life has turned out this way. Oh, I get it now. I got the treatment. I see what's going on there. That's what you end up finding out, and it's sad. But like I also said this morning, though, loyalty. Glenn is a loyal person. I appreciate that. But you don't have to be loyal to a fault. Loyalty's in different levels. It's a different thing. People think certain things are disloyal, and I don't think they're disloyal. Like, I know people, we were talking about people leaving the station earlier on. I know people who take that very personally here. I'm not going to mention their names. I don't take that personally. I don't take that as a disloyal act. I take that as, I hope you're not going down the tubes. That's what I hope. But some people get very offended by that. Matter of fact, last night, we had a meeting here, and a name came up from the past, nobody in this room, but somebody from the past who had left this station at one point, there's still a grudge against that person. And I can't imagine that.
Against that person?
Well,
or they have it against you?
No, that.
No, against them.
So, wait. They have a grudge.
The person left the station.
Yeah.
And one of the other people at this station still is ticked off about it.
Why?
Because they feel it's disloyalty. Listen, if you left, there would be people who, and showed up someplace else, there would be people who would say, well, traitor.
Oh, I would.
Yeah. Tune in that week, Matt. The first week you're gone. we'll rake you right over the coals. We'll nail you good. No, I always tell people that. I do give the speech when somebody leaves. I always say, listen, we've got to talk about it because people are going to ask. But we're going to come on. We're going to give the speech. We wish them the best. We're going to let the audience, they're not going to be here anymore. And that's it. And we're not talking about it. Because I don't want to come on and bash the person above the head and shoulders for 45 minutes. But we could. You know?
Yeah, I suppose you could.
I'm sad we did not get to the Barbara Walters thing, but it'll be still as good. Think about this for next week. We might do this one tonight. I find this fascinating. Barbara Walters, the legendary journalist, there being a definitive biography is being written about her, which I'm, whenever it comes out after they die, within a year after they die, because now they can't sue them for all the things that are wrong. But one of the things that has been leaked out about this book that has not come out is her last words. And they found out her last words because they're on her tombstone now. She's now, the tombstone has been set in Florida. She's buried in Lakeside Memorial Park in Miami, Florida, where her parents are. And her last words were, "No regrets, I had a great life." I think that's fascinating. Because if you read her book, she had a lot of regrets. But yet, in the end, those were her final words. And on her tombstone, that's what it says. "No regrets, I had a great life." So, what would you say about your tombstone? What would your epitaph be? And we'll get to that next week. That's going to be... remind me to get back to that.
Remind you?
Yeah, because I'll forget. Just like the batteries in the clock, I'll forget. That'll be one of those things that'll go by the wayside. Because you want to know why? It is what it is. That's exactly why.
Exactly.
Do you want to sign off, or are you going to say Harding crossing the Delaware?
Alrighty, I'll give it a try.
Tell people to tune back in tonight, do a promo. Hope the other station you work for works with you like this. By the way, that's the intellectual property of WGH. You can't cross Washington and the Delaware at another station.
Yeah,
we'll sue you blind.
I mean, I don't know if I would want to, because you know it's not accurate anymore.
Okay.
For Matthew Morgan and everybody else here at WWG.
You didn't do the promo.
Now we're just
the promo after
Scott,
the
now
exit.
We're just everybody.
Everybody else.
We
just
don't
everybody
even have
else.
Names.
Used to be names.
Okay.
You do the promo before the sign off.
Fine. Okay. Be sure to listen at 8 to 10:15 tonight. We're gonna do the Friday Night Live show. It's always great. It's gonna be me, Scott.
8:15 to 10, but that's okay.
Oh,
the time's not important. Don't worry about it.
8:15 to 10. It'll be me, Scott, and Carrington, and Sean, I do believe. Don't miss it. It'll be great. And for
there you go.
And for Matthew Morgan, Pastor Craig, and Scott Spears. Thanks for watching. Oh, man. I'm so bad. Okay, well,
literally.
I'll get it right now.
What were they watching?
Oh, no. This was quite a viewing party.
You can stop staring at your radio now.
Yeah.
Just locked eyes.
Gonna give it a try? Or
what? Okay. For Matthew Morgan, Scott Spears, and Pastor Craig.
Hey,
everybody else, the
lineup got better.
Everybody else here at WWGH, where Washington crosses the Delaware, thanks for listening.
You didn't say yourself. But anyway, it worked.
It was good.
For the gang, we'll be back tonight at 8:15. We're heading for the dugout.
And the prosecutors who work with Marmet certainly make an impact in our community. I'm proud of all the work that led to this great recognition. Aqua has it out.